Everyone's asleep.
Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is, according to the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Fed in New York, is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest, coming on and joining us with us here, is from Sacred Geometry International. His name is Cameron Wiltshire. Cameron, welcome back to the show. I've had you on before.
Hey, Vinny. Glad to be back, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. How are you doing, man?
Hey, you know, I'm hanging in there.
Not that good then. Let's see if we can do something about that.
For sure, for sure.
What do you want to talk about today, bro?
Well, there's so much we could talk about. What have you been speaking on this week with your guests? Like, what's fresh in your mind?
Well, synchronicity, I guess. In fact, there was something occurring to me. I'm not sure how tall you are. How tall are you?
I guess 6 foot, 6'1" with shoes on, that type of thing.
Okay,
and
okay.
And you're like 8 feet tall, obviously.
6'4", 6'5" with shoes on.
Okay.
And my cousin Patrick, he's like 6'8". And and you see the size of his feet. He can go snorkeling without flippers and stuff. It's freaky. And he when you're really, really tall, everybody comes up and asks you, everybody says two things. Wow, you're really tall. And secondly, they ask you a question. Do you play basketball? And I was with my mates yesterday. We were editing this this music video. Incidentally, the guy we interviewed the day before was talking about music and synchronicity and stuff like that. And so synchronistically, a mate comes around and we make a music video, of course. And we're standing out, we're talking, and I told him the story about my mate, my cousin Patrick. This very short chick comes up to him in a bar. And she looks up and she goes, wow, you're really tall. Do you play basketball? He looks down at her and he goes, no. Do you play mini golf?
How did she take that?
I don't know. I think it's inconsequential because it's a brilliant line. We recently had this politician in New Zealand, right? He says to this waiter, do you know who I am? What the waiter should have said is, hey, everybody, we've got somebody who's forgotten his own name. All right. Well, that was actually just what was on my mind today. I'm not sure why. I was just remembering it, doing it from yesterday. That's what's fresh.
Seems like a lot of people are having experiences with repeating numbers, synchronicity, you know, mystical experiences more and more. Maybe it's because we're entering a new phase of human evolution. That's my theory.
Yeah, I don't believe in evolution. I believe in devolution, though, and I think we're definitely devolving.
Well, that's like saying you believe in inhaling but not exhaling.
That's true.
You kind of need one with the other. I mean, so why is you don't believe in evolution?
I'm just joking. It was a joke. That's all.
We had such a great dead. I couldn't distinguish it.
Yeah, that's my bad. My bad. It was all in the delivery, yo.
So it's you're just getting up for a while. That's probably we'll chalk it up to that.
Yeah. But there can be an argument for devolution. I mean, and it's what's interesting about devolution is it's not just a biological thing. There's also sociological devolution and so on and so forth. But then again, part in the same parcel, there's also social evolution. Now, is it devolution or evolution, though? Because think about this. We now have iPhones, which allow us to, or Skype, which allows us to communicate video to video, right? Now, is that social evolution, meaning it's allowing the communication between two people who ordinarily wouldn't be able to communicate and see each other at the same time, or is it devolution because instead of being forced to meet somebody in real life and have real social contact, that there's some kind of social skills that are, what should we say, atrophying as we speak? the real skills about being in a room with somebody, or the body language and things that you read off from top to bottom, as opposed to just the head and shoulders.
Right.
And this is the thing that I'm probably, this is a pet project of mine, wondering whether or not we're evolving because of the use of technology in our social spheres, or if we're simply losing what it means to be human.
It's a bit of both, I think. You know, it's inevitable we're going to have to adapt to technology and employ it because, for instance, you know, that's a good, because we're both activists, we both care about the same topics, and we want to do all that we can to inform our brothers and sisters out there as to the real state of affairs, and technology enables that. But at the same time, you know, thousands of trolls online, a lot of them are, you know, government-sponsored, that just want to, you know, muddy the water and poison people and use all these disinfo tactics. So it's kind of give and take as of everything. Maybe with synchronicity. Oh, go on.
Oh, I've just got to say that... everything gets better and worse at the same time.
Right.
You know, like, nothing's ever getting totally awesome or totally suckful. So, you know, it's sort of like the yin and yang. That's what history is. You know, there's big chunks of history where, man, the predominant a bunch of it sucks, but there's, like, these little nuggets of awesomeness in there.
Yeah, truth. I mean, maybe it's just, that's just duality in a nutshell. It's like, have both, the bitter and the sweet. And, but it is a little worrisome because I see that. I went to a comic book convention. My girlfriend's a professional comic illustrator. And so I'm always going with her to different cons. You see a lot of people that are immersed in culture and fantasy culture. And a lot of their social skills are already somewhat impaired. Seeing a culture that reinforces that type of awkwardness. And then seeing how that's become more and more prolific, because that's potentially what the rulers want, which are isolated individuals staring at glowing screens and developing alternative personality to escape from the humdrum enslavement that they exist in. So that's a little bit odd.
Well, I think it's something that's echoed throughout humanity, really. There's this newish film came out called Dread 3D. We went and saw this, and I was watching one of the behind-the-scenes commentary last night on it, because it's a very, very Agenda 21 type of film, like a fascist on-the-spot executions kind of thing, and trying to glorify that. And what I found interesting was that the use of the drugs in the film have these really, really serene, slow-motion, high-color scenes that really break from the rest of the darkness of the film. And the filmmakers were saying that this is something that would obviously happen in a giant concrete jungle where people have a very hard life and 95% unemployment, wouldn't it? They would seek whatever means of escape to something beautiful that they possibly could. And I thought that this was actually quite a profound realization for me, in knowing that, hey, I think I've figured out why so many people are on drugs nowadays. It's because the life that they're being forced to live, crammed into these cities, in a lot of ways, sucks, and they can't deal with it, and they need some form of escape. Likewise, there's that physical escape that people get from ingesting substances on top of the psychological escape. Let's say, for example, you're sitting, you have a family of non-like-minded people, okay? They call you a conspiracy theorist, they demonize you, they laugh at you when you speak. And part of the reason why you listen to shows, say, like the Vinnie Eastwood show or many others, is because you're trying to escape from that family situation, which sucks so much as well, and attempting to manufacture a relationship. This is like theoretical, of course, trying to manufacture a relationship with somebody on the air because they're saying something that you potentially agree with more, a lot more than, say, your family. And this is like celebrity culture, right? That's how that kind of works as well, because, you know, it's such a dull drum life. I don't understand why people want to do all of these things instead of simply changing their life, voiding their need for any of these other things.
Maybe they're in, panted. They're under a spectrum sort. They need to snap out of it. You know, I mean, if you drop the billboards that maintain an illusion, radio programs that maintain an illusion, you've got constant bombardment by advertisements that are subtly changing your perception through, you know, rewiring your subconscious. And if you pay attention to that, and you look around and you're, how many people are in that type of enchanted trance, it can be kind of scary to realize how people are susceptible to it. But more and more, yeah, on the positive twist, I people who are becoming jaded and disenchanted, and they are starting to aggregate, and you know, shows like yours helps those types of like-minded individuals find, start to build something different. There's a part of the population that wants to be led, that doesn't want the responsibility to do something, this gift of life beyond maintain. And that's just maybe just until a few thousand years from now, we can expect that's going to be the day.
Yeah. Now, Cameron, your audio is breaking up a little bit. If you have any other web browsers or anything open, you want to probably close those and save your bandwidth for the Skype there. And there's also some kind of a fan sound in your microphone. So if you want to move the microphone away from the F-16 engine that you have for a computer, there,
sorry, man. It's, I tried to set up a microphone and my face. It wasn't working so well, so I have to go with the internal mic. So I'll lean closer. I don't know if I can do anything about the fan, though.
Don't worry. I mean, as long as we can hear what you're saying, it's fine. Now, the concept here, I think we're really touching on, is about, you know, humankind's evolution. And the thing is, it's about evolution of culture, as far as I'm concerned, because culture can evolve much faster than organisms, in my opinion. Mm. That's assuming the theory of evolution is fine, which according to...
I guess you could say.
Yeah. So, I'm just wondering here, how much have we actually really got to go before we become these perfectly balanced individuals? I mean, we've got a long way to go before we've got a peaceful society, for one. Don't we? A long frickin' way to go, because there's so much misunderstanding everywhere. How long would it take? Let's say there was a global tyranny, and what this global tyranny's objective was to educate everybody as to how to overthrow tyranny and scumbaggery and how to keep eternal vigilant watch over your community so that it never rises again. How many years of indoctrination would it take for an entire world's culture to suddenly no longer accept tyranny, no longer accept bad situations and try to placate themselves with vain entertainment, and instead change those situations for the better?
Well, I can't speak with any certainty, but maybe seven generations, maybe, and especially given the technology that's available. I mean, look at the advances we're making in so many different fields. We're going to be soon destroyed, so that could, you know, plant the seed that there's really no need for a resource war. And so getting rid of that that fallacy that we need to have rights, we pillage others themselves, open up space travel and exploration and showing people that's our ultimate goal, is to utilize all of the resources.
Cameron, you're still breaking up pretty significantly. Would you be able to turn off your webcam? We'll see if that helps.
Yes.
And if that doesn't work, we've got your phone number, so we can connect you up on that one after the break.
Okay, I will work.
Just quickly press the webcam button that turns it off.
I don't use. Is that better?
No, it's not.
No? Shucks. Let me.
No, it's okay. It's okay. There's not really a whole much you can do about it. I mean, I can understand what you're saying. It's just a little bit with the Megatronian kind of Transformers type bajigger to it. So.
We'll do a cell phone. How about that?
Yeah. We will. I'm just going to grab that info up here, unless you want to type it into the Skype chat very quickly. And I apologize to the listeners for the technical difficulties. Skype usually has far better audio quality than phones and things like that. So what we normally do is just have the guests up on Skype. But of course, in cases like this, you just have a phone number handy. It's not that hard. All right, and if you're going to do cell phone, I'd advise you just to turn your webcam back on and then just mute your microphone, so that way we can have your audio through the cell phone and still have the visual for the audience who'll be listening on YouTube.
That sounds great.
And also, conveniently, there's a break. How about them apples? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Saved by the break, saved by the bell. And if you don't expose scumbaggery, you're sure to go to hell. We'll be right back after this little number. The way it's going to be. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Cameron Wiltshire. That's Wiltshire without an H. He's from Sacred Geometry International. Is that .org or .com, bro?
SacredGeometryInternational.com.
All right, it's the .com. Now, speaking of sacred geometry, I was wondering exactly what part did that play in the evolution of human consciousness and the human mind and things like that. Like, have we actually got anything to show for it? Like, check this out, bro. This is what I made with my knowledge of sacred geometry, and it makes Skittles or something.
A great question. I mean, given that everything that we experience already is composed of sacred geometry, I would have to say pretty much everything that's ever been built by man on some level incorporate sacred geometry, whether they realize it or not. That being said, what specific principles have manifested magically? Oh, goodness, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. So right off the cuff, I'd say perhaps the Gothic cathedrals are an example of employing sacred geometry. The effects are something someone might have to experience in person. I can relate to experiences I've had and places here in North America that incorporate similar forms of geomancy and geometry and the effect it's had on my consciousness. And I can only imagine what I might experience going to, say, Chartres Cathedral. And, you know, and then you have to think, well, what could be potential for people doing a particular ritual or a certain evocation of a certain tone and a certain auspicious time with certain auspicious alignments, perhaps? It creates kind of a super conduit to the greater macrocosm. And perhaps that type of mystical transmutation is something that our ancestors were aware of. So that's theoretical. I think there's people that have, you know, brought up some good points about that potentiality. But in terms of, like what have we created, everyday people can point to and say, ah, that's sacred geometry gave us that, you know, the Great Pyramid. I will leave it at that.
I do think that you're right. How it has, everything's built upon sacred geometry and the mathematics of the universe. Anyway, so regardless of what we're trying to accomplish by talking about it or studying it or understanding it more, it's already everything. So by trying to understand this, what you're trying to do is understand everything. And in my opinion, it's not possible to understand everything. And therefore, it's not the point of trying to learn about sacred geometry. It's more like trying to figure out whatever you can that's within your reach in the small space of existence that you've got, like this little blip on the radar. Like, here's X and X billion years of existence, and here's my, like, 100 years of it that I might be able to learn something on.
Yeah, and it could be that. So you look at, say, for instance, like fractals. Have you ever stared at videos of fractals where they just infinitely grow and expand and contract, and it's the same form? You know, perhaps what sacred geometry does is let us know that regardless of how minute our presence or our influence, that we're connected to this larger framework that we can tap into. So I think about, like, the idea of a wormhole. You know, what if this whole thing, we're in some way, some type of holographic simulation, and we experience, you know, a corner of that in terms of our perception, our five senses. But what if there were a path laid out where an initiate could self-evolve willfully, alchemically, and start to be able to perceive greater range of information, and then to perhaps communicate with, you know, non-physical intelligence that already evolved itself and wants to help us. Maybe there's a benevolence inherent in the system that doesn't get a lot of traction because, you know, if everybody started, you know, communing with God independently, it would be very hard for any, you know, a dogmatic authority to get them to, you know, give up all their power.
And maybe it's because dogmatic beliefs are solid, whereas reality just doesn't. It has a dynamic equilibrium to it. Everything's ever changing, but staying the same.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's really weird to think. Do you believe in reincarnation yourself, Danny?
I've seen some children that have been born 80 plus miles or however far away from a family and know who that family is and everything about them. Without ever having met them, right? So there's something going on. I don't know whether or not we all get reincarnated, and certainly that doesn't happen to everybody who gets reincarnated. Just some people have these incredible recollections of past lives. And, I suppose there's quite a lot of evidence for it. I'm prepared to accept the possibility.
Yeah, and then how much would that change the mass paradigm if more and more people accepted that? I think it would actually be beneficial. Because you think about, like, the Judgment Hall of Osiris and the idea of the weighing of the heart ceremony that takes place for people exiting this life and preparing for the next life that's given in, like, Egyptian cosmology. Are you familiar with the Book of the Dead? Or it's actually, apparently, that's a mistranslation. It's supposed to be the Book of Coming Forth by Day, I believe, which has a totally different connotation. It's something we seem to have done to Egypt overall, is just kind of, you know, put them in this little box that says, oh, they were just egomaniacs and they wanted to build giant structures to glorify their namesake. So just don't pay any attention to them. But what if, in fact, they were some type of just a totally alien culture that had tapped into some of these ideas and realized, wait a minute, this is an illusion. There is this larger game outside of this one incarnation. And to the degree that you become aware is the degree that you become able to change your perception willfully, tap into something greater, and maybe understand laws like karma, so that rather than having a YOLO mentality and say, okay, I'm just going to go, you know, abuse my body and abuse other people and just get whatever I can like a consumer parasite, I'm actually looking to build something greater with my time here, and I'll be rewarded.
Well, there's also the other interpretation, oh, if I die, I'll come back anyway, so it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah, that's right. But what if you, when you came back in the body of an invalid because you had been so wicked, and you had to, not that all invalids are wicked by any means, but what if you were at a custom-tailored, like, front-loaded program that said, okay, this is what your spirit needs to understand.
Well, conveniently, if we have the global eugenicist takeover, you'll get aborted and you'll come back as something better because of the horrible thing that happened to you getting aborted, huh?
I missed what you said right at the end there. I'm sorry.
Okay, if we have a global eugenics takeover and you're saying somebody will come back as an invalid, for example, the invalids are now going to, like, there's an agenda now to identify and code children while they're still in the womb, so that anybody with Down syndrome or anybody with such and such or blah, blah, blah can get aborted.
And so
what concept does this put upon that little hypothesis of yours that you might come back as an invalid? Because according to the eugenicists, you shouldn't be allowed to come back.
Well, they can't control people at all times. And I'm just putting that out there just for the theory's sake. Like, I don't actually adhere to that. And, you know, I'm working on writing comics, so my mind tends to go in weird places. And, you know, but what if? What if people suddenly, it became very trendy, if you will, to experience altered states of consciousness that could confirm through experience that there is this whole other level of reality, you know. And of course, the eugenicists that you described, they've had their fingers those types of operations with MK Ultra and so on. And then maybe there's history that goes back to ancient Egypt, where maybe you have people who want to liberate and then people who want to control. And that kind of like Jedi Sith duality has just been present throughout all of history, just behind the scenes. You know, but again, I'm writing comics, so make of that what you will.
Well, you know, what was it in V for the Vendetta? Writers use lies to tell the truth. Well, right. Politicians use lies to cover the truth up.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do feel that this is something that human beings have, that these eugenicists and psychopathic individuals do not. Creativity. The ability to use lies for good.
Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed your recent podcast. We had a gentleman who was an expert on sociopaths and psychopaths.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Sheridan. It was a good show.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Please have him on again. And kudos again for spreading these ideas, because until you realize that such a creature exists, you really are susceptible. I look back at my life and the encounters I've had and some of the concepts he laid out, like, you know, the fact that they could smile, but then their eyes didn't smile, like these telltale signs that you're dealing with somebody that's not really empathically connected to you or your greater good. And so in hindsight, it's given me a lot of clarity. And so that's another paradigm that's emerging, that people are going to say, well, wait a minute. There's this whole predatory species or potential out there. Intelligently, to defend ourselves, we need to inform one another.
Mm. Now, see, I liken that to a horror movie dead giveaway. You know, if somebody says there's a monster in the woods before they find out that there's a monster in the woods, don't go in there, bro, he'll eat you. Then you go, okay, sweet as, I'm not going in there. And then suddenly you don't have no movie.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, and, you know, in my opinion, if you're living the horror movie, it's best not to watch the film.
You don't want to wake up and realize that, you know, you are already part of this, or that this is just like a dream reminding you of what's real. So to speak.
Well, it's more like if you get told about psychopaths, you know that there's monsters out there, and so you're not stupid enough to enter the basement.
Right. Well, you know, it comes down to the individual, because what do they do is, from my own experiences, like a lot of manipulators, they're going to use flattery. They're going to try to figure out where you insecure and try to exploit that. And so in a way, they do help temper you and make you self-aware. And so maybe that's part of the system. It's like we need a dose of psychopathy. Thankfully, it's a minute dose, but unfortunately, it's like fluoride. It's accumulated to the point where we're all brain damaged from that. So.
Well, you know how kids get cuts and scrapes and things like that. And I remember some guy, I was listening to National Talk Radio, and a guy called up and he says, you know, everything's getting so soft and padded around nowadays. When I fell off a swing as a kid, I scraped my knee. And then I got up and got on with life. Nowadays, you got padding down everywhere, and it's like, oh, my goodness, do you need a plaster, et cetera, et cetera. And we've just gotten frickin' soft. And I think it just makes us perfect prey for psychopaths, really, because we all haven't been hardened the frack up, as it were.
Yeah, we're being groomed, and it's really, you know, disturbing to see what's going on in American public schools here, where children are being arrested and being tased and you know, just being expelled, which, you know, actually could be a blessing in disguise, but, you know, just being subjected to the system at an early age to condition them to accepting it. Pretty disturbing. And, you know, I myself will never, ever let any of my children or adopted children anywhere near a government institution of indoctrination. And I know there's people, good people out there making that same declaration. So, you know, more power to you, and you're not alone. And you don't need that. You don't need them to get an education. I mean, look, I've been able to teach myself skills that would have cost $20,000, $30,000 to go to art school or video school for in a year's time.
Yeah, skills that you wouldn't have even ever wound up putting into use if you'd only done it in a practice lab. It's like, I was just thinking about that last night. We were sitting here with my mate Daryl from Bass in the Park, and we were just sitting here editing this music video together, and I'm showing him how to do all this stuff. And for somebody to put an entire music video together, like from raw footage, in one night, no. they'd take weeks, months, even years before they go, no, 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 we'll do this right, we'll do that right. And I'm just like, no, no, no. It goes in time with the music. It looks freaking fabulous. Awesome. Done. And when you learn that you don't need to frack around, you suddenly save a shockingly large quantity of time.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sitting there learning stuff and not actually doing anything with that knowledge right at that particular moment is doing? It's wasting fracking time.
That's right.
You've got nothing to show for it. Oh, I've got knowledge. What knowledge? Apply it. I don't have any jobs, okay, because you ain't been doing any jobs while you're learning that knowledge, you freaking idiot. Harden up, you know, just get out there, freaking do it. You know, this is the best piece of advice I was ever given. Well, actually, second best piece of advice, and I'll get to that in a second. I was asking these guys who said that they were into green screening now for, like, the movies and stuff. You know, how do you get into the industry? How do you do all that? And they said, just do it. So it's like, yeah, that's actually really profound advice. You know, you don't need help. You don't need favors. You don't need referrals. You don't need nothing. All you need is yourself and the willing to just go, you know what, frack it. I'm just going to do it. And best piece of advice I ever got was don't take yourself too seriously and don't take what other people say about you personally.
That's sage advice right there.
Yeah, truly. That's Catherine Smith from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. She's a very, very smart lady.
Excellent. Right, that's what we need. You know, we just need some wise elders. Yeah, that's another thing they do with the schooling system is they put everyone that's in the same age in the same box, you know, so they can't work together and figure this stuff out with children maybe a year or two advanced and get that kind of brotherly, sisterly connection flowing through the whole tribe. And so once we, a lot of, in terms of shifting this in time, the sooner we get rid of the fetters, the sooner we get rid of all the straitjackets that they put around us and the chemicals and all this manipulation and the media, it's almost as though we have this innate reset button that we can press at any time. And maybe that's the spiritual aspect of life.
That's something that I've actually said for a long time is the society is so fracked, like a computer. You just need to set the reset button, begin all over again, okay? All the programs, we need to reinstall, like a full defrag and reinstall, brother. Let's get this virus out of the system. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite, by satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end a planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
Now, we need you to chant a healing mantra for Vinny's computer. So it's gonna go like this. Just kidding. I don't know if anyone's hearing that or not. I'm just kind of BSing here. Waiting for Vinny to get back on. Hope that was somewhat entertaining. Or feel free to ridicule me. Okay, sweet. You can hear me. Awesome. So does that mean I'm on air, American Freedom Radio? I'll just keep beatboxing. Okay. Everybody beatbox with me. Get over yourselves. Like Vinny said, don't take yourself too serious. Whatever you're doing, drop it and give me a beat. Okay, now I feel pretty stupid. But anyway, that's the beauty of the internet. You can be stupid and people you never meet will ridicule you, usually anonymously because they're cowards. But hey, that's the downside of what Vinny was talking about earlier, you know, and culture starts fading and people lose respect and basic decency and politeness. You know, and they ridicule you according to something you posted on a government-sponsored platform like Facebook. Or they come after you in your chat room or your comment section of the articles you post. does get old, but it does also teach you not to take yourself too seriously. So that's why I'm just flapping my gums. I hope Vinny was not abducted by the Men in Black, you know, because he talks a lot about a lot of weird stuff, and that's how they operate, apparently. They just vamoose with you. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to keep talking to myself. Well, let's all say a healing mantra for Vinny being returned by the Men in Black. May a higher alien beings that are benevolent release him using their psi rays. And this is kind of awkward, even for me now. I'll just start reading something kind of interesting. How about that? This is a letter from Randall Carlson to Graham Hancock. This is top secret info, folks. You should feel privileged. Hello, Graham. I hope you recovered from your hip replacement surgery. I have several friends that have undergone that operation and are doing quite well. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be author of the month last December. I feel somewhat remiss in that I did not contribute to the forum to the extent that I would have liked. I was dealing with some health-related issues that proved to be very distracting. So I'll skip, because that's a little more personal. And, skipping forward. Anyways, I was excited to read that you are planning a sequel to Fingerprints of the Gods, arguably, in my opinion, one of the most important books of the late 20th century. In spite of the criticism emanating from the defenders of orthodoxy, the basic premise of the work holds solid. The evidence for advanced stages of culture in the prehistoric past grows stronger by the year. It is also becoming evident why for so long such evidence could be overlooked. The lack of, quote-unquote, hard evidence for ancient civilizations, whatever form such evidence would be expected to assume, is exactly what one should expect when the truly extreme nature of multiple catastrophic environmental events is taken into account. Consistently, those who have condescendingly dismissed out of hand the possibility of former lost civilizations have utterly failed to take into account the extreme nature of the environmental catastrophes that had not infrequently overwhelmed the Earth. Now back to Vinny. So, safety release from the Men in Black.
Okay, excellent. We're back and all the technical issues are allegedly resolved and stuff. I don't know what the... You can't hear me? You can? Is that better? Can you hear me, Cameron? Hello? Okay, right. Excellent. You can talk, by the way. Oh, crap. We've not got you on your cell phone either now, mate. He's typing away there. I can hear everything he's typing. All right. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for the technical issues. Cameron's sitting there typing away. My Skype's dropping out for some fracking reason. I hate sometimes these kind of issues. I wish I was living somewhere that didn't have, like, the worst fricking internet in the world, but unfortunately, I live in New Zealand. Believe me, it has, like, the third worst internet in the OECD. It's frickin' terrible. And not to mention, this computer's, like... I don't know how the rest of you activists work, but I ram the Shiite Muslim out of my computers, okay? They don't survive terribly long without starting to frack up. It's just that technology ain't made to be used hardcore, like all day, every day, producing hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of content and stuff like that, you know? They just can't do it. They don't hold up. They give in under the strain, and it doesn't matter what stuff you move onto a hard drive. It doesn't matter what programs you install or uninstall. Okay. It just gets so terrible. And so, yeah, here I am ranting about the technical issues, and we finally have Cameron back.
Hey, sorry. By the way,
in case you didn't notice, your microphone's been on the whole time. So now when you speak and you're not muted on Skype, I hear you through the cell phone and the Skype.
Well, let me mute myself on Skype. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that makes a hell of a difference.
Oh, you know what?
You also just turned off your webcam, too.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I just kind of went into outer space with a little rambling stream of consciousness monologue, so I hope everybody is okay with that.
Yeah, I hope, because I have no idea what it was that he said.
Good, you didn't miss anything.
If you say so.
Yeah.
crap. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. When you have issues like this, it just ticks the frack out of you and it gets you off your game. So in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. We started off this conversation talking about human evolution or human devolution and what's happening and the part technology plays. And I think this is actually a perfect example of what part technology plays in human devolution sometimes.
Right.
Because it just dissolved the fucking conversation. It evaporated like so much cow fart gas.
We had some real momentum, and then, you know, technology just gave out and turned us into monkeys, chattering monkeys. Well, at least me.
So. Yeah. Please release me from technology. For I don't love you anymore.
Yeah. I need to say back to Vegas, buddy.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, it would be cool to do, like, Tom Jones on stage or something like that, you know.
That's what I was thinking. You could throw a pickle in the end seam of your pants. Yeah. Get the ladies to throw their underwear at you. All ages.
Well, I'm be more thinking about, you know, one of those cucumber thingies, but regardless. Hey, speaking of pornography and cucumbers, this is a real. I'm not just being dirty here. This is actually a story that one of my listeners sent me. Monsanto's new GMO cucumbers make your pubic hair fall out. And he said, man, they work really great in the porn industry. And I say, what, the hair falling out or the cucumbers? Probably both.
Hey, two birds with one stone.
Yeah. I mean, you got to dig more on Santo for their credibility and their creativity. I mean, like, you know, they specifically developed something that makes you lose pubes. Man, I doubt that they're a bunch of predatory pedophiles, eh?
Right.
Maybe I'll just diverge there just a little bit too much, and I apologize if I offended anybody, but yeah. Something like 100,000 children go missing every year in the UK, 400,000 go missing everywhere in the United States and never fracking seen again. What do you think happens to all those kids?
I heard it was 800,000. Actually, Bob Tuscan's done some really good work on exposing that, you know, just the shame of this reality that just goes so unnoticed and unreported.
Yeah. Why do you think no kids are on the back of milk cartons anymore? Because there's not enough milk sold in all of America. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that is listener supported. So if you're capable of, financing this little operation to the tune of $1 a month or more, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and click on the subscribe button, and we'll give you some commercial-free archives as well. It saves you all that time that instead of waiting and listening to the ads when you want to get back to the conversation. Sure, you can download the ads and skip them manually, but imagine it being skipped automatically for you. It's really nice. It's like TiVo without needing the ability to fast forward. It just goes straight to the stuff that you want. There's good, juicy nuggets of information there. So please, by all means, There is a bank account number there too, if you're capable of making international or national transfers into there on an automatic payment basis. All it does is give me something to live off so I can keep doing what I'm doing, which incidentally is more than anybody else in the country is doing in terms of alternative truth talk radio or video. I saw people releasing a couple of videos, short videos, low quality videos from the Monsanto marches. I saw one person do a very, very professional, good video, and I promoted the heck out of that video and said that it was way better than anything I did. But I did 15 videos of in high HD quality from that one Monsanto march. And as a direct result of those 15 videos, those people who spoke at the march all have their entire speeches encapsulated and put on YouTube in HD. Okay, now there's a reason for that. It's because nobody else will do it, because they either do not have the time or the resources or the skills necessary to do it. I do, and I'm putting those skills on the line, basically, because people need it to be done. That's all I want to do, is get done what needs to be done, because nobody else is really taking personal responsibility for it. Unfortunately, I cannot do it on my own, and I need your help and your support so that I can go out and help and support others. Just pass that parcel along. Give something to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and you will be astounded at what I accomplish with very little resources. My very special guest is still Cameron Welcher, who, as I believe it, is on the cell phone. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, glad to be back. And I'd like to issue a challenge or a request to all your listeners. I'm going to donate after the show because I believe in what you're doing, Benny. And if they match my donation, you know. Also, not to sound like an abundant minister, one of these Joel Osteens or anything, but truly, when you give, you do give. It is the law of reciprocity. You know, if you believe in the concepts that Benny's working so hard to provide for the greater good, you know, help this brother out, man. Send him some goodwill, some good love there, and know that it's going to show up in your own situation. And we got to have the courage and the faith to, you know, put feet on our prayers, walk our talk, and support those that are out there working hard for really your health and your children's health and the health of the whole planet. Because what's more important than this Monsanto protest gaining steam and taking on a life of its own? People have to understand they have the right to reject this BS in their food. That's going to work their own minds and their children's bodies. So I'm happy to support you, Benny, and I ask other listeners out there, please, you know, match my donation. I'm going to put up $111. You know, if they can do a tenth of that, 11 bucks, so to speak. Math's not my strong suit, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But that's what I'm going to do for my brother Benny here, because, see, I know what it's like as an activist. I've done a lot of work with We Are Change Atlanta, 9/11 Truth, you know, Cynthia McKinney, Luke Rutkowski, Richard Gage. And, you know, you'd be surprised how many well-known activists online are willing to sleep on the floor, you know, sell everything they own to do this good work. So the least we can do is offer up a little extra we might have so they can keep doing this work and helping humanity evolve. We got some baddies trying to shut us down, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it comes down to the point where maybe you don't have the time to go out and do the protesting or something of that nature because you're busy working. And maybe if you did have the time, you'd go out and maybe you'd work for 1 hour or something like that, and you'd be on the megaphone or you'd be at a protest and you'd march down one particular street or something like that. That amount of time that you spent earning instead, you're still supporting the system. And it's basically like, just do something. It doesn't have to be big. Just do something different. If you want things to change, don't do the exact same thing with your money every single day. You know, try and do something like it's like an investment in alternative media, because if you are consuming this content as well, I think you must comprehend that these kind of shows would not exist without both your listenership and your continued support. So it actually is a reciprocal thing. So regardless of how much work I put in, had I not you generous, loving, caring people to give back or to just keep listening to all these incredible voices and shows that we do here, it would be for naught. So you make it worth it, essentially, and it just keeps going around in that kind of infinite little cycle there. And it's pretty awesome, to tell you the truth, Cameron, because it's been a lot of years. Just building up to this point where I'm even capable of paying my bills at all. Yep. By doing this. And I've said this on radio many times. Every single thing that I own, and I'm not exaggerating, I haven't bought really anything for myself in more than half a decade or something. Everything gets given to me, okay? The computer was given to me. The microphone was given to me. The headset was given to me. The camera filming us right now was given to me. The studio lights that have gone on was given to me. The posters on the walls of John Key and chemtrails and things like that, they were all given to me. My pants were given to me. My underwear was given to me. My T-shirt was given to me. I don't really own anything. I live 100% on the generosity of others. I'm like a leech on society that instead of sucking your blood, pumps awesomeness back in.
Nice. We have a symbiotic parasitism going on. Just kidding. You're no parasite, Vinny.
I'm like one of those little fish parasites that hovers near the shark and stuff like that, and make sure that shark is kept clean while it protects me from the big other, not larger fish or something than the shark or anything, but much larger fish than me. You know, I don't know.
I like that. It's a good visual model.
Yeah, or some kind of a bird that sits on the back of a hippopotamus picking parasites off its leathery back.
Yeah, and we all can do that for each other. We can all be grooming each other, keeping parasites at bay. And, you know, a lot of it is just, like you said, just make a slight shift in behavior. You know, stop drinking fluoridated water. You know, stop eating GMO food. Refuse to do it. You know, it'll cause you to fast, but it'll cause you to become more awake and aware. And you'll say, well, what is my body telling me when I eat this garbage? You know, I saw a thing with Lee Camp today. He was just decrying how this guy had a McDonald's hamburger that was pretty much in the exact same state it was 14 years previous when it was originally purchased. And it's a hilarious rant. It's on disinfo.com right now. And, you know, and thank God for Lee Camp and these other folks like yourself with good sense of humor that help us laugh, even though it's such a tragedy. And I still see people lined up around McDonald's. It makes me sick. Somebody's got to talk to them. So, you know, friends don't let friends eat McDonald's. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. A friend with McD's is not a good friend indeed.
We need some more mixed metaphors to bring down McDonald's. Yeah. Why do people still eat a McDonald's? I mean, come on. Buy a piece of fruit. It's a trend.
It's just the addiction factor. You know, you go past it and you smell as a modified beef tallow that they fry those chips in, and all those memories come back from childhood. It's like, it was good to have that ice cream cake and stuff like that when I was 8 years old in that little indoor playground and stuff like that. Oh yeah, that Freudianness is working on my brain gasm now. Place. Oh, I want some of that melted cheese and that rotten lettuce that's been sitting on the roasting tray for like 4 hours. Oh my god. I remember that time when I was drunk as heck, when I was walking back at 4 o'clock in the morning, and there was an all night McDonald's, and everybody in there looked like a freaking zombie. And then I walk up to the tellers and I make sure that I get myself like the most crustiest, oldest, most horrific burger that I ever conceive of in my life. And god damn it, it was good.
Well, that, and they're strategically placed near every exit. So, you know, if you're traveling in America, the food quality outside of major cities is deplorable. It's really scary. Like, I have a brother who drives trucks for a living, and, man, he put on almost 100 pounds doing this job. You know, you're sitting, you're traveling 12 hours at a time, you know, all over the country, and the only place you can eat is truck stops, and then you sleep in the back of your truck, and it destroyed his body. I hope he's recovering now. But it was, you know, and when I travel, I'll go aisle to aisle, and it's like, I can't eat any of this, and nor would I want to. And then there's always, like, a Subway and a KFC built into it. It's like, what is this? What kind of monstrosity is this? And like you said, people are just in a trance. They're just in there shuffling their feet, guzzling caffeine, being productive for people that hate them. You know, if they could just, you know, get the spiritual fortitude to take a risk, you know, to advance on their path and have a little faith. Because you walked on faith, right? Like, you didn't know that you would be here years later. You just said, I got to do it. And then the people showed up and said, hey, he's built it. I'm here. I'm going to support.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I didn't do it really out of choice. I did it out of a lack of options. I just couldn't keep working and earning big money and stuff like that while the world went to hell around me.
Good man. Hey, and there's a lot of good brothers out there and sisters that are doing great work. And, you know, we just build these networks up. We help each other, inspire each other, and really build a family. Because, you know, if you have people that you can trust and that have your back and know who you are and where you're coming from, you'll find that it's such a powerful force. Just people praying for you, people keeping their eyes open on your behalf, and you doing the same, it makes you feel great. So we've turned this into, like, all of a sudden a fundraiser. I feel like one of those folks on PBS a little bit. But it's true. You have to support those who are supporting you. And if you're listening out there and you have the means, help Vinny out and know that it's going to come right back to you.
Yeah, well, it always does. And people do show up. And that's what I found was really quite funny, is that you go into it and it's like you're going in blind and you have no freaking idea whether or not you're going to have an effect, whether or not people are going to listen, whether or not you're going to be assaulted by police, or whether or not the activists are going to appreciate you making the videos for them and stuff like that. And sure enough, you just start to learn from people firsthand, and you start to live vicariously through the really gallant actions of others. I think that's what really motivated me, is because I got to see the best of humanity, who would stand up against people like Monsanto, who would stand up against corrupt governments, who would stand up against the city councils and Freemasonic mayors of untold, unparalleled levels of scumbaggery being committed and being exposed by these really gallant people in the truth movement globally. And you feel so inspired by them and all the work that they're doing that it makes you feel guilty that I'm not doing enough. I was talking to my mate yesterday, bro, and he's looking at the amount of subscribers. Got nearly 7,000 subscribers on YouTube, right? And the New Zealand Herald, our equivalent of the New York Times here, has like 3,000-4,000. Okay, right. So I'm like twice as popular as basically any two mainstream media outlets on YouTube here. I told him what my last paycheck was. All right. Nearly $5,000 in cash and $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers, like at a mall, so I could buy anything at this mall. Okay, that was my last paycheck. That was for 45 days work.
Wow.
All right, and people still accuse me of doing this for the money.
Who do that? They really do understand what a sacrifice it is. And they feel a little bit ashamed, so they kill the messenger. They say, oh, Vinny, you're just like me. You're just in it for the money. You've hardened your heart, and this is a gag. You're not a regular Joe. You can't keep a 9-to-5. That's your issue. You probably have ADHD, blah, 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 blah. Repeat whatever television tells me to think constantly, because, you know, they're just trained to pick people like attack dogs, you know, certain trigger words, you know. And they do that through the media. They say, oh, conspiracy theorist, or you know, whatever other epithets they like to hurl at people who are thinking openly and independently. And those are people that, you know, they are accurately referred to as sheeple, and they don't really matter, and they don't usually leave much of a mark on history because they're just conformists. So who cares about them? Did that come off bitter?
No, I think it came off as rather sage. And I was just wondering, what are your recollections like this? Because if you're donating over $100, and I'm quite surprised at that, bro, then thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm just wondering, what motivates you to show that kind of level of support? What motivated you to help out Randall Carlson with Sacred Geometry International and all of that kind of stuff? I mean, who were you before all of this happened?
Well, I feel like I've always been a fighter at heart, and I've always been, because of circumstance, aware that the world is injured and in need of redemption and healing. And so it's basically just my life path to be an activist and to be of assistance to this transformation. And I think precisely because I honored that calling, you know, I've had times where I've fallen off and tried to be normal, and it just, you know, swift kick in the arse, it didn't really work out for me to avoid the call. And so when I got back on the wagon, I had all these you know, repetitive mystical encounters, synchronicities, premonitions, precognitive dreams, you name it, all in a row, coinciding with my Saturn's return. So for people out there who dabble in astrology, they're probably familiar with this concept that Saturn, this massive planet in the sky that is mythically so potent, as identified as Kronos, or the old man, the reaper, the hurler of the thunderbolt, the king that was deposed by Jupiter, you know, the planet. I'm sorry, I'm going on and on with the correspondences here, and I hear the music starting, so I'll kick it back in. Overdrive once we come around.
Yeah, we'll kick it back into overdrive once we come around. That sounds really cool, like a song lyric. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Hefty tax demands, that's what they do with the heavy dippers. Oh, yeah. Cameron Wilshire is my guest. Now, we were going into a break just as you were sort of explaining a little something about something. And also, I've been told by the missus, who doesn't normally listen, but now she is, that I've been talking about myself way too much in the last segment. Which is actually for that. Actually, incidentally, she's got me a little note right here that she passed me out during the thank you. Hey, stop talking about yourself. I want to hear more from Cameron Wilshire. You know, she's become my producer all of a sudden. It's great. Okay, so without further ado, go for your
sure.
life, Cameron.
I forgot where we left off. I was starting to go into a little bit of a trance myself and just recall a bunch of details about the planet Saturn and what it could mean, and then I forgot how I got there. So that's the downside of cannabis.
We were talking about how you got into this this whole activism mindset and things
like
that, and what your meaning is for doing all of this.
Well, you know, I believe there is something about our past being written in the stars, and so my own personal coordinates are: I was born on the same day as Dr. Martin Luther King in the same city, and 50 years from the day he was born. And I realized that after 10 years or more of idolizing him, studying him, visiting, you know, his home here in Atlanta, and trying to understand, like, where is this conflict coming from and how can it be healed, even as a young person. You know, my father's a Vietnam veteran, so I can attest firsthand to the experience of post-traumatic stress disorder on soldiers and just how they basically farm. They create the conditions of impoverishment so that they can farm young men and women who just want to go through their natural rites of passage at the time when they're becoming young men and women, and how that is perverted and they're turned into mercenaries that have to feel that guilt for the rest of their lives. So that was eye-opening for me. I got into, always had an open mind because of weird experiences I've had. I've had out-of-body experiences. I've seen UFOs. I've had, again, like I said, experiences of precognition in my dreams. That would, you know, we're warning. And so when that stuff mounts up and you compile it, you just have to incorporate it into your paradigm. You know, I'm not going to be cognitively dissonant and say, oh, well, since these smarmy jokers over here deny everything that they can't weigh or measure, then I've got to, you know, ridicule myself to fit in. You know, I've never really been down with that. And so in regards to meeting Randall, it's so bizarre, but it's so perfect. And I just got on the horse because it felt right, and I had a vision. And in pursuing that vision, I was shown that, yes, this is a way that you can be communicated with. And if you look throughout the ages, people like Joan of Arc or whomever, Muhammad, any of them, I'm not saying I'm a prophet. I think every person who has a good heart can be shown something that will guide them if they're honest and sincere. You know, wherever you go and whoever you speak to, if you have benevolent intentions, there are forces that want to guide you and will support you. And I want other people to have that assurity in their own mythical quest, because that's to me, the purpose of myth is to inform you of what the reality of this game, this paradigm, this universe, and how we are challenged in a moral sense. And, you know, even though we may fall, it seems that the process of redemption is one that is well understood by our ancestors, and we can cultivate that knowing by going through certain rituals. And the substances that enable those rituals to really take root, you know, conveniently for the status quo are made illegal, and the people that offer them are often, you know, incarcerated for very long prison sentences. So, you know, kind of upending that paradigm, I think, could expedite that evolution we were talking about at the first part of the show. You know, getting rid of the blockages. So, is there any, I'm just going on, you know, I'm just talking. My wife's going to come and bring me a letter saying, you're talking too much now. Speaking of her, actually, I'd love to have her on your show sometime. She's really a fascinating individual, and she is an incredible artist, activist as well. I felt so isolated from so many people doing a lot of this work, even a few years ago. 2 years ago, we did a show with Richard Gage, Luke Rutkowski. Cynthia McKinney was on the docket, but she was in Libya at that time before Gaddafi was murdered. And so it was pretty intense. And we went all over Atlanta looking for somebody to host this experience, this ritual, if you will. And one Baptist church finally had us. And it was so intense, and it was also very draining. And so had she not been there right by my side, I don't think I could have survived. And so I think that's another thing. If you're out there looking for a mate that, you know, is open to this stuff, yeah, they're out there, man. There's some really cool girls out there that have heart, and they want to raise healthy babies, and they want to do what's right. And they're looking for men that are willing to walk on faith. So don't fall prey to the MTV illusion that girls just want your money, or they just want, you know, whatever they've been programmed to think. There's some really good women out there.
Yeah, I mean, women aren't all after dumb, good-looking guys.
With money and power.
Dumb, good-looking guys with money and power, okay. You know, it's like, this is my idol. I'm going to be a stupid, good-looking guy with lots of money and power, too. I want to be some form of a great leader that actually helps humanity in some small significant way that manages to improve people's lives and relationships with each other through comedy.
Amen.
That is an objective to strive for, and I don't think it'll get me too much flingy sex dates or something like that if I was perhaps a Rockefeller of some kind, who incidentally got hacked up with a $15 chainsaw from Bunnings in Australia not too long ago because he went to a swingers party and he didn't bring anybody.
Whoa, is this real or is that just...
Yeah.
So there's a Rockefeller who got hacked up because he didn't BYOB at a swingers party.
Yeah, I believe it's BYOP, but...
BYOSF?
Yeah, BYOBFF.
BYOYNCA?
Yeah, and in fact, I saw a very interesting scale the other day. It says knowledge of the lyrics to the song YMCA by the Village People. Right. And it has these four letters YMCA, and the knowledge is way up. And then it's the rest of the song. It's like got nothing. But nobody knows any of the words.
So this guy got hacked up for real? Where did this happen? Australia?
All right. Yeah. He's a New Zealander, a New Zealand Rockefeller of the branch. But he was over in Australia on, and I'm doing air quotes here for the radio listeners, on business. What kind of business you into, Mr. Rockefeller? You wind up associating with people that would hack you up with a chainsaw because you didn't bring any other swinger with you.
Wow.
That's the kind of people these fracks hang out with. That's the kind of loyalty these people have from their very close friends who they share intimate love relationships with.
Well, maybe it's not actually a love relationship. It's an exchange that mimics human lovemaking.
I used the term love very loosely.
Right.
you know, love in the non-genuine, totally sexual and perverted sense of the word love that has been sort of manipulated, you know. I wonder about this. How many vacuous, fracking, disgusting pop idol trash have you seen sing of love and be really terrible with relationships?
That's pretty much all of them, right?
Uh-huh. So when people listening to these people and talking about love, what kind of example is it really setting for them?
It's a good point. And it causes that innate confusion where they say, well, I really like this person, but I don't always feel that they're satisfying my ego needs like Beyonce complains about constantly. So being that she's the goddess that's always in my mind's eye, you know, I'm going to default to that position because I've already styled myself, whether I realize it or not. Actually, I had a friend like this. It was really scary. Like, a really sweet girl, very intelligent, younger. She was like a little sister, and she was doing the whole duck face thing and the hipster glasses and just, you know, I'm going to get a tat, and I'm going to do all these things that I think will make me sexy, and not realizing that she's already just a beautiful person, just totally beautiful. And thankfully, she found a good guy, and they're together, and I think she's been able to let go of some of that. But for a time, it was pretty scary. She was going out getting drunk. She was idolizing, you know, these vacuous pop stars, like you mentioned. And, you know, I imagine as a parent someday, you know, trying to avoid that phase or just making sure they never fall prey to those false idols that are just robots, man.
It's like we were talking about before about spotting psychopaths or spotting any kind of danger. And I think inherently that's actually what parenting is supposed to be about, is about preparing your child for the dangerous world and being able to spot the threats and hazards. Like when you're teaching somebody to drive, what do you teach them first? Oh, how to look for hazards. Mm. You know? And we were talking about working ethics and stuff, and I had a great Facebook status yesterday. It was, what's the point of having a work ethic if the people you're working for don't have any ethics at all?
Yeah. And see, that's where the path you've taken is actually very admirable, because you said, you know, I can't support something that's a monstrosity. No matter what gloss you put on it, it's sick and it's evil and it's twisted. See, I myself, you know, I look at people like how do you pronounce the gentleman's name? Diogenes Laërtius, who's like a, he basically lived in a barrow out in front of the market in ancient Greece, and he was one of the most profound philosophers. And that was precisely his contention. He was like, look, I would rather be, I'm really the person that is rich, is what he understood. I'm the person, to steal someone else's quote, he said, I'm, you know, rather than homeless, he's home free. Actually, which is another weird thing involving hacking, a little synchronicity here. You remember that guy who, he was like a, he had a red bandana on. He was like a very popular meme about 2 weeks ago. This young man who killed a dude who had hit somebody with his car. And yeah, he was just walking along and he ended up using a hatchet to bludgeon this dude. Do you remember that?
Are you talking about the two Muslim men who allegedly beheaded a British soldier in London?
No, but I guess it's in the air. This is another experience, maybe a month previous. There's this young hitchhiker who he got in the car with this guy, and the guy ended up being crazy and admitting to basically having raped people. And then he ran over someone and was, you know, basically committing murder right in front of his passenger. So the hitchhiking passenger jumps out of the car and had a hatchet on and basically, you know, caved this guy's skull in and saved the person's life. And so it's odd that you had mentioned a beheading, and then I had this recollection, and that's an aspect of me that's weird, that we could tie these two dots together that may mean nothing. It was just floating in my consciousness because you started off with the Rockefeller and hack the pieces. So let's continue on this dismemberment theme.
Yeah.
Sorry.
In fact, this is a great segue there, because I was thinking about having after the show today. I don't know what you're up to, Cameron, but I was thinking after the show we have after the show chat with the listeners, because we've had the Vinny Eastwood Social Network chat group on Skype open for some time, but we haven't done a call for a long time, and I feel like having a chat with the listeners after the show, it's like unrecorded or all free up and stuff like that. If you'd be keen to join, Cameron.
Oh, that'd be fun. I appreciate that. And I think it's great that, you know, you have listeners that want to participate and that you invite them into the conversation like that. I think that's awesome. Because, you know, rather than just being like a snob or, you know, one of those folks that wield whatever little power they can get, you're very open-hearted. You're like, hey, let me reach out to my fans and pick their brain.
Well, I think it's more like I get endowed certain powers. I'm having a radio show host, you know, like I can, if I ask people to be in a certain place, I find now if I advertise protests, people actually turn up because of me.
All right.
And what I find interesting and best about that is although I might be the reason people go there in the first place, they'll meet other people there who are of like mind and they'll make friends with them and then they suddenly don't need me anymore. And that's actually what I prefer, is that people develop relationships and things like that, because I can't be everybody's friend, you know. There's many, many people on this planet, despite more the fact that more people listen to me. I'm really only valuable to my own friends and my own family and things like that. I can't be everybody's savior and best buddy, but I can sure as heck make an effort to try and get out there and be friendly and not be a douchebag, and that kind of thing. Because, you know, I've just got the ability to. So it's a waste of my time and a waste of other people's life if I don't, you know, use those abilities for some form of good, I guess.
Well, good on you, man, and it's great that you're encouraging people to come out, and then they can make that step and find their friends that are just like them, and you're a connector. And how do you pronounce the gentleman's name that does your booking? Is it Guillaume? Is that correct?
Yeah,
a sweet guy, and he's doing the same thing, and I like to do that for my friends and say, hey, you should go on this show because you're all awesome and you'll get along. But no pressure, though. You don't have to become anyone's best friend remotely, but I understand. It's like with celebrity culture, people do fixate on celebrities in any fashion. So the minute you step behind the podium or on a screen, there's this weird, pre-programming that can take place in people where they just start idolizing.
Yeah, it actually happens sometimes. Like when I went to that Monsanto protest, there were so many people who knew who I was, but I have no idea who any of they were. And I try to counteract that by saying, well, you know who I am, but please tell me about yourself. You know, how did you wake up and stuff? What's your name? What do you do? So I've at least got a little bit of information about you. If you're listening to me, I mean, wouldn't I be a bit of a douchebag if I didn't listen to you?
Hey, good point. That's that reciprocity.
Yeah, man. I mean, frack. We're not meant to stagnate. I mean, talking to people is like cash, and that's why the word cash flow exists, because it must flow like the conversation. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Back. It's the final segment here with Cameron Wiltshire from Sacred Geometry International. .com, and we've discussed a few things today, but you were talking about some kind of a when I dropped off on the Skype, I think it was the last segment of the first hour, you were reading out some form of letter of Graham Hancock or something, as Sarah tells me.
Oh yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I'd be happy to share it. Essentially, Graham Hancock is writing a sequel to his most popular book, which was entitled Fingerprints of the Gods. And for those who don't know, essentially what it does is lay out the case that mankind has, in fact, amnesia. Our species has amnesia in that we don't recall civilizations prior that were technologically advanced. And so we are literally remembering this information as we're putting archaeological, geological, archaeoastronomical, and mythical information together and straining out the fact that, hey, not only is this likely that it happened, but more and more evidence is showing up every day that this is, in fact, a new paradigm we're going to have to come to accept. And the ramifications of it are staggering. So essentially, it's rewriting history. And what Randall has devoted the lion's share of his work to is helping people make this transition so that we can be a successful species in the long term. The reason being, in our DVD, Cosmic Patterns and Cycles of Catastrophe, if you make it to the end, you'll realize that in the last, say, 180,000 years, which is the estimate given for the existence of modern, anatomically modern humans on this planet, there have been over 15 events, really 16 to 17, with new data becoming available, that if they were to occur in our current age, they would essentially reboot us and push us back to the Stone Age. And so that type of revelation is staggering. And the evidence is mounting from all over the world. And so this is a letter that Randall penned to Graham Hancock, advising him of the work he's been doing as it relates to the most recent catastrophic event 13,000 years ago, which essentially drowned North America led to the eradication of over half of the megafauna, which are animals over 100 pounds of body weight. So your great saber-toothed tigers, your woolly mammoths, your cave bears, you know, hundreds of species didn't make the transition from one world age to the next. And Randall's put together probably the most cohesive argument as to what the mechanism for that catastrophe was and how it is, in fact, incorporated in stone monuments all over the world and in their mythical literature. And it's really profound. It's a huge download. And so that captured my interest when I met Randall, and I just realized that he was a genius that needed help getting his message out there. And right about that time, YouTube was really gaining prominence. Web 2.0 was kicking into high gear. And I realized, you know what, this is a story that needs to be told. And I just devoted myself to helping him any way I could. And so that's what I've been involved with. But, yeah, I'd be happy to read a few portions from this because he's such an eloquent writer and it's truly staggering information he's conveying.
We've got about, let's say 8 minutes until the end of the segment. You can get a good little read on.
Okay. Well, should I pick up from where I left off or should I kind of start over? What do you think?
I'll pick up where you left off. I'll catch the archives.
Okay. So previously he was just describing, you know, gratitude for Graham's work, Fingerprints of the Gods, and describing that it's arguably one of the most important books of the late 20th century, and I agree. And then he goes on to say, you mentioned in your announcement that there were two things which have inspired you to consider going forward in a sequel to Fingerprints of the Gods. On the matter of Göbekli Tepe, I only know what I have learned from you, what I have learned from things you have written, along with Dr. Robert Schock and a few others. And from what I know, I would agree that it is a find of considerable importance towards provoking a shift in the historical paradigm. On the matter, the idea that North America was struck by several pieces of a giant fragmenting comet 12,900 years ago, et cetera, is one that I have been thinking about and researching for some 25 years. I gave a series of recorded lectures at Warren Wilson College in North Carolina in May of 1996, where I described in detail almost exactly the scenario that has emerged from the evidence of the Clovis Comet. In the late 1990s, when I put up a website to document some of my research, I designed a logo that represented my belief that the Great North American Ice Complex was struck by multiple pieces of a fragmenting comet, along the lines of Shoemaker Levy 9. If you go to that website, cosmographicresearch.org, you can see the logo with the comet zeroing in on North American ice sheets, on the North American ice sheet. Okay, and then he goes on to say, let's see if I can skip forward, because a lot of details here. I kind of need to get his permission because it's so much private correspondence. So forgive me, listeners. Okay. And what he describes here is something called the energy paradox, which is quite fascinating. And essentially what it is you've got 13,000 years ago, this huge sheet of ice that's surmounting North America from, say, forgive me, Randall, if I do. Imagine from St. Louis onto the North Pole, that in some places is 2 and 3 miles thick. This colossal sheet of ice is upon the landscape. Now, when that ice is melted, it manifests in global sea level rising 400 feet worldwide. So think about that right there. Imagine if every coastline you've ever visited in your life, every coastal city, were suddenly inundated by 400 feet of water. You know, what would be left of such a society or civilization? And how much energy would it take to melt that much ice? Well, what he's describing is that scientists back in 1973, they ran into what became later known as the energy paradox when they started to do calculations and they said, well, where is the natural form of, where is the greatest natural collection of heat energy on the planet that could potentially melt away this much ice, and how long would it take? And when they did the calculations, it didn't make any sense given their orthodox interpretation of geology, which is the paradigm they employ is called uniformitarianism, which is that all change is slow and gradual over time, whereas a catastrophist model would be that there are sometimes there's punctuated equilibrium wherein a static or more uniform state is, how should I say this? Forgive me, I'm a little bit stumbling here. The day-to-day slow shift of climate is Ah, forgive me. I'm totally goofing here. Randall's probably rolling, cringing. but basically, that equilibrium is punctuated by catastrophic events, and the type of change that would take thousands of years could be accomplished in a matter of weeks and months. And so he puts together a lot of plausible evidence here that we have not actually solved this ice age paradox or this energy paradox. And the only way to really account for that type of energy is to look outside of our sphere, to look into the heavens, to look at these celestial dragons like comets and asteroids. And so it's pretty profound because, interestingly enough, it coincides with the mythical record of the idea of being destroyed by, say, Jupiter or Saturn hurling the thunderbolt. You know, so the God judging man. And before I butcher it any further, if people would like to go to our website, sacredgeometryinternational.com, we've got several articles attesting to these facts. We've got videos there. We've got, of course, the presentation, Cosmic Patterns and Cycles of Catastrophe, where we, and Randall especially, builds up the story so that any layperson can kind of can follow along logically, and there's no, I don't know, we don't require you to take anything on faith. We're trying to make a very cogent argument for this reality. And so that's basically what the gist of this letter to Graham is. And I'm going to try to convince Randall in time to release it, but until I have that permission, I can't go much further, I'm afraid.
Hey, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you just got a sneak peek. And that's never been read out on air anywhere before, has it?
No, as far, and Graham Hancock may not have read it yet because he's so busy. So if you're out there, if you'd like to help us out, everyone just think about Graham Hancock opening his email and saying, well, there it is. There's another piece of providential revelation, because, I mean, that's what we're dealing with is like also a biblical scale. I mean, we're talking about the geological reality behind Noah's flood, perhaps, you know, or for flood myths around the world.
That's right, everybody. Focus your mind on Hancock's inbox, and that's not a sexual reference.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it, and I believe that works, man. You know, I've, in my own experiences in rallying the troops and getting people to look at things that are uncomfortable, you know, people see you and they say, hey, Benny's got courage and he's funny, he's handling this with aplomb, so I'm going to go hang out with him and get a little bit of that mojo, which is really the inner mojo I'm seeing reflected in him. And we just pass it along and grow it.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to also mention to people that we are, again, to reiterate, having a call after the show. This is not recorded. This is just a bit of a social chat. So if you want to, you know, come on and just have a laugh with me and Cameron, you can add me on Skype. Vincent.Eastwood is the account. Just send me a contact request and make sure you say in the comments section there when you're asking contact request there, mention that you want to join the Vinny Eastwood social chat, and we'll add you in there, and we'll be starting the call right after the show finishes today in just about a minute or two. So lastly, just the customary repetition plug, sacredgeometryinternational.com is as sacredgeometryinternational.com does, just like sacredgeometryinternational.com. Right.
Yep.
You're gonna repeat things again. You repeat things a couple of times because it's just. In fact, this is how to train your brain. Did you know that you actually make your mind stronger by using repetition? And ironically, it's also used for brainwashing. No connection here between me repeating sacredgeometryinternational.com, though. Of course.
you're a good intention poacher, if any.
If you say so. Cameron Wiltshire is being my guest, ladies and gentlemen, from, you guessed it, sacredgeometryinternational.com. And we'll be back another time, ladies and gentlemen, with another guest, another day, another dollar. See you again sometime, folks.